The Guardian.
World Cup, every 4 years is the World Cup, World Cup.
If you don't pick up a grunt straight in the build-up, then we'll love it when you score a goal.
Ooh, did you see that?
World Cup, it might all end in tears or a headbutt. You can follow all the blogging on your laptop. From Slovenia to Slovakia, from Nigeria to the Côte d'Ivoire.
Ooh, ah, Côte d'Ivoire.
The Guardian and Observer, packed with World Cup coverage every day.
World Cup Daily Live, with James Richardson on guardian.co.uk.
Day 12 of the World Cup, and it's a long flight home for the hosts. While the Bafanas split, Argentina are through, Uruguay 2, and Les Miserables bid adieu. The pod rounds up who's in, who's out, and who's shaking Raymond Domenech all about, and then licks its big puffy pod lips at what's in store tomorrow. USA, Algeria, Serbia, Australia, the Boating Brothers in Germany, Ghana, and, oh yes, England. After putting JT over his knee, can Capello give a spanking to the almost as scary Slovenia? Can Terry backtrack as fast on field as he can off it? And how will John cope with yet another new partner at the back? Because it's not like he's used to having new partners, is it? All of that and more, including the word inside the Slovenia camp, in World Cup Daily. Hello, world. On board today, Paul Doyle and John Ashton of The Guardian.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, John. Hi, Paul. And husky voice temptress Amy Lawrence of The Observer.
Hello.
Hi, Amy. Oh, woof. Right. Later on, as I mentioned, a word inside the Slovenia camp from the intrepid Sean Ingle. Jonathan Wilson also. I think we might be hearing from Raphael Honigstein, but, you know, we shall see. Sadness on Tuesday in South Africa 2010 as South Africa leave the competition. Any thoughts, John, at this point?
Well, at least they left with their heads held high, to use a well-worn cliche.
No, it's a cliche because it's true.
Well, yeah. On this occasion, certainly.
Yeah, indeed so. Yeah, well, there you go. We hope the party continues, etc., etc. But it was a stirring performance. It was the hope that got you, though, wasn't it? Because when they got 2-0 up against France, you really thought...
Yeah, and Hugo Lloris was probably the only French player to play well, unfortunately, for South Africa, because but for several saves by him... They may well have got the goals they needed.
Mm.
They still surpassed expectations, you know, so it wasn't a failure.
Mm. Well,
France, on the other hand, was
France, on the other hand. So much to talk about from Tuesday. Four games, of course. The one we've just seen, Argentina-Greece, Paul, though you were watching Nigeria-South Korea, which was a very sensible choice, because Argentina-Greece wasn't the most interesting, was it, John?
No, which is why I was watching.
Oh, really?
South Korea, Nigeria.
Amy, just you and me then with Nigeria.
Well, in fact, I made the worst possible choice, which was to try and watch both. So, in fact, really, I managed to miss all the goals, and effectively, it was 0-0 in both games for me. So, thankfully, you get to see a little bit of highlights at the end. What I did catch of bits of games is that obviously it's nice to see, although he's not scored yet, Messi is clearly beginning to shine in this tournament, and it almost seems bizarre that he hasn't scored yet because he has had so many very close shapes.
Well, the Greeks were very effective
him was the issue, and they were debating on TV whether or not this would be the blueprint for future teams. And of course, you would expect that later on in the competition, if somebody can man mark Messi, they might, you know, you might be up against teams who are a little stronger and more offensive than Greece, more capable on the counter-attack.
Do you think that in a way, the perfect result for Maradona would be if Argentina won the World Cup without Messi scoring?
Oh,
or do you think he genuinely wants Messi to...
Hmm.
Well, he's giving him enough man hugs and kisses to suggest that he does actually want him to do well. But there's that element that the ego of Maradona... It's like when someone breaks a scoring record and the old previous scorer comes out and says, oh, I'm so pleased for
him. I don't agree with this.
Breaking my record.
Messi didn't have to play today. He rested other people, but he kept Messi on there. Messi loves playing, and Messi had plenty of chances and hit the woodwork after an astonishing bit of movement.
If Argentina do go on to win the World Cup with Messi starting, Messi still won't have equal Maradona's achievements, because he'll then have to go and manage Argentina to victory as well.
Indeed. Anyway, I'm sure Jose Mourinho will be very upset to hear you crediting Otto Rehhagel with a blueprint for stopping Messi, because, of course, he's into a fair old job of that. Much more exciting, anyway, than the Argentina game was the Nigeria-South Korea, at least according to the highlights I saw. Paul, was that fair?
Yeah, I think so. It was a helter-skelter kind of game. It was exhilarating, but error-strewn. But South Korea, I think, deservedly go through to the next round, because they're a better team. They play with greater cohesion and diligence. And although Nigeria have probably individually have better players, more talented players, they were let down by lapses of concentration, both tonight and against Greece, indiscipline, and really only they sabotaged themselves.
And Yakubu, you didn't mention Yakubu.
Oh, and Yakubu's
was that the worst miss of any game or any?
Well, I was just about to say it's a tribute to Chris Iwilumu, surely. Yeah. His infamous miss against Scotland. It was almost exactly or against
Norway?
For Scotland against whoever they were playing in.
And I was thinking Iwilumu, Mario Gomez, but this is right up there with them. Did you see the?
Yeah, it's one of the very best ever. Surely,
describe it for us. John.
Well, I'm not sure who's the player who's coming down the left wing for Nigeria, but he skips past his defender and cuts the ball back across goal from very close in and not hard, quite softly, entirely taking the keeper out of the equation. So the ball is gently rolling across goal for the Yak to basically stick it in any part of the entire goal. But he seems to determine to side foot it into a corner and instead side foots it wide. It's an absolutely astonishing miss.
Well, he didn't side foot it. It came off his heel.
Oh, did he? Is that his excuse?
It was an impressive bit of contortion, really.
Had he scored that goal, what would the consequence be for Nigeria?
Well, Nigeria would have gone through. Well, actually, that would have equalised it. But
they then eventually
And in fairness, he stepped up to take a penalty and score it only minutes later, which took a
There might have been a few worried glances in the rest of the Nigerian team. Are we sure we should let him do this?
No, but given some of the security worries facing one or two of their team, Nigeria, it's quite a serious business missing an open net like that. Anyway,
but it's curious because it kind of... Sums up the world at the moment, the world economies anyway. The Asians, despite having inferior natural resources to Africa, performing better, and Europe jaded and bankrupt.
Well, you couldn't get more bankrupt ethically, could you, than France in terms of team spirit and dignity and all that. And their World Cup came to an end with a 2-1 defeat to South Africa. As we say, it was cruel because it did seem that South Africa might be pulling off the miracle. Astonishing scenes at the end when Carlos Alberto Pereira, the South African manager, comes up to shake Raymond Domenech's hand. And what happens, Paul?
Well, Domenech refused to shake his hand and instead gave him a strong lecture, apparently, according to Pereira afterwards, apparently about comments that Pereira made many months ago about Thierry Henry's infamous handball. And Domenech, being a petty and vindictive man, hadn't forgotten them and thought now was the perfect moment to bring them up. And so lost the match and lost the last vestige of his dignity. So
I have to say, it was probably the most depressing thing I've seen in this entire World Cup.
Apparently, Carlos Alberto Pereira, the reason for his sanguine reaction was that he didn't really understand a word of what Raymond Domenech was all about, because I don't think there's much common language going on there. And it was only really when one of the backroom staff was able to sort of interpret what was going on. It's probably the only reason that Carlos Alberto Pereira either didn't walk away or lamp him one, which is really what most French people would have liked to have seen happen.
But sort of like the crazy people on the train that you just kind of smile and think, I must get away as soon as possible. Interesting, yeah. Anyway, official government inquiry coming up for the French when they return home, and Laurent Blanc, who's going to make a massive clear out, is he?
I don't know if he'll make a... Well, he will clear out some players, but he'll also keep a lot of the current squad and hopefully get better performances out of them. It's interesting, though, there's a lot of hope, obviously, with surrounding Laurent Blanc, because in his short career as a manager, his Bordeaux team have played with panache and audacity and everything that that the French team has lacked. Until he first started negotiating for the position of France manager, which was back at in the early part of this year. And since then, he seems to have been contaminated by whatever has infected Les Bleus and Bordeaux, who were 9 points clear at the top of League One at Christmas, collapsed and didn't even make the Europa League. So it doesn't particularly augur well for...
Le Monde's quote, France are out, the World Cup has lost its jesters. For the first time in French history, the public and the players greet an exit with relief. Jean-Paul Sartre wrote that in football, everything is complicated by the presence of an opponent, but this French team showed you didn't necessarily need an opponent. They were able to sabotage themselves. Well, there you go. We must turn the page, or rather rip it out, say Le Monde or the rest of the French public. So, very much back to square one. Thanks, Moby Bad, for your explanation of how the in-house divisions in the French team breakdown. It's basically like a high school thing with Gorkov as the geeky kid and Elka as the bad boy and etc, etc. However, Lazaro posts in and says, I hereby request that you fine fellows stop giving all the Group A headlines to the blatant train wreck that is France and give more airtime instead to the phenomenon that is Uruguay. Please note, Uruguay are undefeated, haven't been scored against, never looked much in danger, have the talismanic and utterly marvellous Diego Forlan, and a smart manager whom the players actually seem to respect as a human being. Spend more time on the renaissance of this former giant. Well, to that end, let's speak to a man who was actually there in Rustenburg Tuesday afternoon to see the Celeste beat Mexico in a very measured performance. Jonathan Wilson. And how are you, Jonathan?
Yeah, fine, thanks. How are you?
Very well, Jonathan. And you are well as well, I trust. And did you enjoy the action this afternoon between Uruguay and Mexico?
Oh, yeah, very much. I think there's certainly been two teams who've played slightly more interesting than I expected them to. I think Uruguay in particular is a very good side.
Well, what sets them apart?
I think they're just very good defensively. But it's sort of, I guess there's two ways of being defensive. There's sort of the dogged Swiss way, which you sort of admire but can't really like. Or there's the Uruguayan way where they're very good at the back. I think Fusile, the left back, he looks an excellent player. He was really good against Giovanni Dos Santos today. Lugano, the big centre-back, I think he's a physically imposing player, but also he's a very intelligent player. But also, they do move the ball around nicely. And they've got players like Forlan and Suarez and Cavani up front who are properly dangerous attacking players.
Mm. And who are in form as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I think the other thing is the coach, Oscar Washington Tavares. I think he's been one of the figures of the World Cup so far. He's great in press conferences. He's 63, I think, now, and he seems very calm. He says that when he was last at the World Cup back in 1990, when he was in charge of Uruguay then, he said he didn't really enjoy it that much. He was too young for the experience. But now he's that much more mature. He's that much calmer. He does this great thing of whenever a question's asked, he sort of cuts his head to the side slightly, as though he's actually genuinely listening and interested in the question. I mean, I'm not saying he is, but at least he makes an effort to look like he is. And then he gives these great long sort of quasi-philosophical answers. I mean, he's one of the great sort of South American left-leaning intellectual football thinkers. He looks very much like he should be in an American cop show of the late 70s, as a sort of wise older presence with his dark blazer and his striped tie. So, fine man, doing a great job.
Yeah.
On the wall of the living room, he's got a quote from Che Guevara about how you need to toughen up without ever losing your tenderness. And I think that sort of sums up their football, that there is a toughness there, but they also do the softer things and nicer things.
Mm, lovely. All right, well, we look forward to seeing more then from the Uruguayans and their lovable, but at the same time, heart of gold, but hand of steel or whatever, Chief Inspector Oscar Washington Tavares, later on in the tournament, and indeed hearing more from you, Jonathan.
Okay, that's great. Cheers.
Day 12, and the tension builds. Here in the pod, a couple of posts. Jock Urquhart. Is Torres the most represented surname at this World Cup? Question mark. Spain, USA, and I can't remember the third one. There are those three Palacios brothers on the Honduran team right enough, but Torres has spread itself worldwide. Le Gaff answers the question. It's Aureliano Torres. He plays in defence for Paraguay. Yeah?
No.
Oh.
There's a fair few Lees and Parks.
Oh, curses, yes. Yes. All right, Laird of Lard. Is the pod team planning to discuss the abject performance of the African teams at the World Cup? Well, we have done, really, haven't we? Haven't we? On previous editions. It's quite possible that none will reach the last 16. Do you think any are going to reach the last 16, Paul?
No.
All right. And is there a one-word answer as to why? You can have two, if you like. Oh, Amy's got.
No, I wasn't going to talk about the Africans, sorry, but just seeing the way the South Koreans celebrated their win.
Yeah.
I think it's really significant that an Asian team has qualified out of the group stages away from on their own continent for the first time, and also with a South Korean manager, because I think particularly when you go back to 2002 and the magic of Hiddink, they idolised Hiddink, like they wanted him to be president, and they were almost serious. I've almost never seen a nation so in love with their coach as they were with Hiddink at that time. And they had, it was like he was sent from some kind of superhuman planet to take them somewhere they'd never seen before. And so I think it was really significant that they've gone through with a local coach.
Mm. That's true, and it was it's a very deliberate policy, because after Hiddink, there was briefly, I think, Pim Verbeek was there. And then after Verbeek left, they said, we're never going to progress unless we move on to the next level, which is entrusting the stewardship of the team to a Korean, basically. Mm. And that's something that a lot of African teams
is that
still
what England needed,
to
Korean,
do.
Do you think?
Perhaps. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or South American.
Yeah, very possibly. You say that you don't think any African...
Maradona.
Maradona. Clearly, that would be fun. What about Ghana, though, Paul? You know, a draw would be enough for them against Germany.
Yeah, I mean, they're a good team. I said before the tournament, I think they're the best of the African teams in it, and I think they've proved that. But I think, unfortunately, they're going to regret not finishing off Australia in the last game. I hope that tomorrow against Germany, and they'll be serious opponents to Germany. It's certainly not a foregone conclusion that Germany will win. But I hope that Stephen Appiah, providing he's fully fit, returns to the team tomorrow, and in place of Kevin Prince-Boateng, who, in my opinion, along with Chile's Mark Gonzalez, has been the most annoying player of the tournament, because he consistently takes the wrong options and sabotages moves. He passes when he should shoot, he shoots when he should pass. And that was their downfall against Australia. He wasn't the only one guilty of it against Australia, but he was the chief culprit.
But what about the romance of the boating versus boating clash?
The boating brothers. That sounds like somebody saw on the Thames on the way in. I think.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. I've just seen guest producer Jason dialing somebody up frantically. I think it might be Raphael Honigstein to tell us the other side of Ghana's final group game, which is, of course, Germany. But a very interesting story it is, too, because the Germans had everybody jumping up and down in excitement with their opening match, and then promptly went and lost to Serbia. There were some mitigating circumstances here, but very much my first question, as and when Raphael joins us, is going to be, which Germany, Raphael? Which Germany?
The new Germany, of course. Oof. James. We are now obliged to call them that, FIFA regulations. Well, if Germany go through and sort of pull through with being a very new team, playing wonderful attacking football, missing penalties, and of course getting knocked out in the group stage would be the next logical step, something that they've never done before. But I'm still cautiously optimistic. The fact that they played fairly well against Serbia despite the defeat makes me confident to think that they could get a result against the Ghanaians.
Okay, no Miroslav Klose, of course, as a result of that unfortunate red card, and Podolski looking pretty woeful against the Serbs. And also the Serbs pretty much, is it fair to say they marked Ozil out of the game? Is that a fair assessment?
I'm not sure. I think Löw was as much to blame for pulling off Ozil rather too early, and Germany lost their shape and their momentum when he came off. I thought that was a big mistake. He's still young, and I think you saw also with Müller, who didn't quite reach the heights of his first game, that these young players sometimes don't have the same consistency when it comes to the performance. But Germany will have one thing going for them. I think that's Richard Kingston, the Ghanaian goalkeeper. And with Podolski shooting as badly as he did against Serbia, I think just getting into the vicinity of goal might be enough to get a goal there. I've seen him a couple of times, not just at this World Cup, but also in a friendly against the Dutch. And you could tell that he's played a grand sum of zero games last season for Wigan. And I think that might be an area where Germany might find some joy.
Yeah. Hi, Rafa. I haven't had a chance to check this out, but do you know our Ghana's centre-backs back yet? John Mensah and Vorsa? Or will they continue with that inexperienced pairing in central defence?
No, neither do I. I mean, the latest I've heard was that they're both sort of in contention, but not definite. And I don't know what the situation with Pantel is as well. He's, of course, broken his nose, I think.
Well, he's more replaceable.
Sorry?
He's more replaceable because Nkum, I think, is a better player than Pantel, and he'll come in.
Yeah. No, but I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, Hans Sapai, the Leverkusen fullback who plays for Ghana, himself admitted that with Lee Addy of Chelsea, that's Chelsea in Ghana, and and Jonathan Mensa, who plays for third division Spanish side Granada, it wasn't quite the same same presence at the back, and they looked rather wonky. And if one or two of the regulars are not going to be there, I think that's going to be a big advantage for Germany. But I don't know what the latest is. Ghana has been very cagey and haven't really done anything for the media either. They've been, I wouldn't say obstructive, but yeah, they've closed ranks and nobody really knows, I think, where they are in terms of fitness.
Rafael, the situation in the group and with Ghana just needing a draw, if it were to be a draw between Ghana and Germany and say Serbia would have beat the Australians, then ouch, Germany would be going out. You don't sound particularly nervous. I wonder, do you and do the German public have any particular thoughts about who they'd like to get or avoid in the next round? Are they as obsessed with avoiding England as England were about avoiding Germany?
No, I haven't heard that yet. I do think because the situation demands a win for Germany, that playing for, you know, with the view to the last 16 is a bit tricky. If they'd had that draw against Serbia, now they could do what German teams in the past have done very well, and which is perhaps lose the last game. They did that in 1986. You know, in the qualifiers for the Euro, they did similar things. And, of course, finishing second in Germany's group would give you the considerable advantage of avoiding Argentina in the quarters. So you'd be, if you can get over the next last 16 game, you would then face Uruguay or South Korea. So finishing second would be not a bad thing, but because the situation presents itself that Germany will find it very difficult to finish second. They either have to win the group or get knocked out. So I don't think they have that luxury, I'm afraid.
All right then. Listen, are you enjoying yourself in South Africa?
Yeah, it's very nice. I'm looking forward to going to Port Elizabeth tomorrow to see England, because the first time I travel outside the Gauteng area, and then I'm going on to Cape Town to see the Dutch. So quite excited to go see a bit of the sea and see a few different cities. So yeah, and I think also the football is getting really exciting. So yes, James, I am enjoying it.
Excellent. Well, we miss you back here, Rafael, at Wrap Up Warm and all that, and we'll speak to you soon.
All right, boys.
Soft, strong, and very, very long. This is World Cup Daily with James Richardson.
Rafael Hornigstein. Group D, Amy. Serbia, Australia.
Well, all I can add is that my Serbian mate, Vukan, is very, very confident all of a sudden. And he says that the kind of the not particularly convincing start, playing-wise, that Serbia has had is a bit misleading.
Ooh.
And that he thinks they're ready to really explode now. So
wow.
I don't think he might be off his rocker, but he may, on the other hand, be about to show us a whole new Serbia.
Well, indeed. They're playing Australia, who have Tim Cahill coming back, but Harry Kewell not coming back. And it could well turn out with a draw between Ghana and Germany, and Serbia going through with Ghana. Crazy stuff, but you know, that's the kind of World Cup we're experiencing. Meantime, speaking of crazy World Cups, let's conclude today with Group C. Yes, England, Slovenia. England, of course, beat the Slovenians 2-1 last September at Wembley, but it was a fairly fortuitous win. This time around, of course, tiny nation Slovenia are the group leaders, and we're a long way from northwest London. Well, to find out a little bit more on what kind of opponents these Slovenes are, we've spoken to our man, Sean Ingle, who's been following them around so far this tournament. Sean Ingle, is that you?
It is, James. You don't call, you don't write. Have you forgotten me?
We had, but a couple of other people dropped out of tonight's show, so here we are, eh? Now, Sean, you've been extremely busy hanging out with your new Slovenian chums, yes?
I have. They're a lovely bunch. The journalists are great. The players are very friendly, always willing to talk. And they're a pretty decent football team as well.
I thought they lived in monkish seclusion.
They missed the first week when they basically didn't put any of the first team as up. But since actually the football has started, they've been very friendly and very open.
All right. And no doubt they've been enjoying themselves, because there they are, top of the group, only 429 registered footballers in their entire country, and they're top of Group C.
It's true. I mean, they are very happy to be top, but their manager, Matjaž Kek, was saying earlier this week, you know, the players are very disappointed they didn't hold on to their victory against the United States. They're a 2-0 up, they had the game in control, but then, you know, the US came back and then verbally, you know, got a point.
Yeah, and we're unlucky not to get more, many would say. Despite that, though, what's your impression of this team? And this is a team that England faced, a little bit more than 6 months ago and had a narrow victory with. Are they a curiosity, a group stage curiosity, or is there the wind of destiny behind this team?
I think they're a very good technical side, and I think they play nice football. They'll probably outpass England. The game against Algeria wasn't a great game. The both sides sat off each other and looked like it was going to finish 0-0. I thought they were very impressive in the first half against the United States. But in the second half, the United States went at them. They thought it was quite old-fashioned the way, you know, the United States played. They had lots of high balls in the box. They had lots of midfielders running through. And it's a really big crumbler, this. And I think that may be a blueprint for England. It might just be a bit old-fashioned up and under might actually scare them more than trying to play football around them.
All right. Because they can certainly play football. They have a fantastic goal from Walter Bursa, and the thought of him bearing down on Glenn Johnson, say, is one that's going to give Fabio Capello the willies.
Absolutely. I mean, Bursa's a really interesting character. He's held it as a sort of prodigy when he was very young, went to France, flatlined a bit for show, but he's played very well for Auxerre this season, and he's played very well for the national team, and I know a lot of Premier League clubs are said to be interested in him.
All right. The phone line's very bad. I got that he was quite podgy as a child, and then he slept around in France. Is that right?
Not exactly, Jim, but he was a prodigy rather than podgy.
All right.
He went to France, flatlined. His career flatlined a bit, but in the last year or two, he's come on and he's probably Slovenia's best player.
All right, with an elephant, got that. Okay, good. Sean, after hanging out with them, what's their view of England? How worried are they about taking on England?
This England team can't be any worse than we've seen already, so they're preparing to face a much better side, but they may be sort of preparing in vain, really, because if this England team doesn't show up again, I think Slovenia may beat them and could certainly get a draw against them.
You think a draw is quite possible? What about a Slovenia win?
I think so. I mean, again, it depends what side England show up, but you've got a team that have been arguing and moaning with each other. They're clearly not happy and they're not playing very well against a team like Slovenia, who are very, technically very good and actually played pretty well at Wembley. I mean, we forget that. They really won a penalty when it shouldn't have been a penalty. Jermaine Defoe scored a deflected goal. Slovenia played a lot of nice football and had the best of a lot of the game.
Right, excellent. All right, Sean, well, listen, it's a very interesting phone line, this one, so we'll let you go, but I hope you're having a nice World Cup and you continue to do so.
You too, James, and I hope I'll see you again.
Yes, please.
World Cup Daily Live with James Richardson on guardian.co.uk.
There you go, then. That's the Ingle report on Slovenia, who were, on one hand, a touch fortunate with Algeria. You'll recall the Chochi goal. Bit of a howler, that one. You remember? A Green-esque slip-up. And they were very fortunate with the USA, who were awfully upset about their winning goal being disallowed. But then again, just as with Ghana, a draw is enough for Slovenia, which is a heck of an advantage. Or is it, when you're going into your final group game?
I think it is an advantage for Slovenia because they're a team who are quite happy to defend in numbers. And they had a very good record defensively in qualifying. But then again, England had a very good record in scoring in qualifying. But I think England are quite a predictable team attacking, which will suit devout defenders. Capello may, of course, introduce a little more of an element of surprise by sticking in Joe Cole, as everyone wants him to, which would, I suggest, help their cause. But England's cause.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Paso says, has anyone actually seen Joe Cole play this season, apart from one backheel goal? He's been terrible. His club won't even re-sign him. Amy?
I was going to say, is it just me, or does anybody else think that the more people go on and on about the fact that Joe Cole should play, the more Fabio Capello is thinking, I don't think I want to do what everybody else wants to do. Yeah. Listen to me. Yeah.
But the most powerful arguments for Joe Cole playing have been the performances by the other players in the first two matches.
Well, yeah,
and
you
can't
same
ignore
for Gareth Barry before he came back. But yeah. I'm not sure that this JC is the saviour necessarily. All sorts of problems at the other end of the team, of course, with John Terry in the build-up. The worst build-up possible, really, to a final group game, no? With Terry speaking out and then finding his supposed colleagues deserting him and then being publicly slapped down by Capello. And the tension now, when those two cross each other in the Rustenburg Hotel with it, it must be awful.
There's a lot of apologies going on, isn't there, in this World Cup campaign. I think it's It doesn't lend itself to the great idea that everybody's all in this together.
But Terry at the back there, who's not had the greatest of seasons, and now you've got another player coming in alongside him. I remember when all that stuff was coming out about the unfortunate business with Mrs. Bridge and one or two other things. And his performances at the time gave credence to the idea that he was actually affected by that. Although he's a brave and courageous player, whatever else you think about him, he has got a lot of personality. It did look like his play was being affected by all the other stuff that was happening. And I'm just wondering how the last couple of days, which must have been a bit humiliating for him, are going to affect his confidence against Slovenia.
I don't think John Terry does humiliation. I disagree with you there, James. I think that actually the way that he behaved over these last couple of days proves that everything that happened to him earlier in the season didn't give him any sense of perspective or dignity or the idea that his self-worth might not be quite what he thinks it is. So I'm not sure about that. And I also think he's quite a lucky man in that if there were more fit and healthy centre-backs in the squad at the moment with experience, I think that Capello might be in a position where he might want to give John Terry a rest for this one, in the same way that the likes of Evra and Anelka found themselves. If you're going to stand up to the manager in a major tournament, in when the team absolutely has to be together, the manager is going to punish you.
A couple of posts on this. Lee Marvin is my hero. John Terry's an awful idiot, but the media lured him into saying what he was saying. He was just too dumb to realise that he was being used. Jimmy Mack for Capello. Terry's press conference was the best possible thing. After Friday's match, there was a big backlash forming against the Italian. His formation was wrong. Ironically, many were calling for the same changes as Terry. Now the country is pretty much united in its condemnation of JT. Well, all sorts of debate about who's going to be in the team. Apparently Matthew Upson and maybe Milner coming back in. I'm not sure. I don't think Joe Cole figures, but yeah, we'll leave that to Tuesday morning's papers. Do you think, though, that after a little bit of bad luck in the opening two games, England are now going to rally and this could be the turning point of their campaign pulled off?
I don't think that the May rally, I don't think it'll be the turning point of their campaign, because as soon as they come up against a really good team, they'll be knocked out, I think. That could be in the next round if they get there.
Hmm. Amy?
Ditto.
And I'll make that three, I think.
Tritter, yeah. Well, that's interesting. And, of course...
Three yeses.
Three yeses. Slovenia topping the group on 4 points, as we say. Then USA and England on 2 points. A draw might be enough for England. But if USA beat Algeria, then a draw wouldn't be enough, of course. And you'd fancy the chance of USA against Algeria, do you?
I'd make them slight favourites. It'd be quite interesting because they're both kind of counter-attacking teams, and the US have slightly more teeth in attack than the Algerians, who've only scored one goal in the last seven games, and that was a penalty.
Mm.
They're toying with the idea of going with two up front, but that will effectively only be one, because it could be zero, in fact, because Kareem Matmoore isn't a striker, he's a midfielder who they shunted into the forward line in their last game, and he did his best, but his best wasn't good enough. And Gazelle from Siena in Serie A is a terrible player.
Mm. Oh, there's ditto all round. They're excellent stuff, Paul. Well, that's where we'll leave things then, as we await this whopping Wednesday of action. Many thanks to Paul Doyle, to Amy Lawrence, and to John Ashdown, and to our special guest producer, Jason. And we'll leave you with a little special outro. Now that their own tournament has come to an end, now that the World Cup has no Bafanas, producer Pete has been out and about garnering South African opinions on England's chances of going through to the next round. So we'll leave you with their thoughts on the big game. Goodbye.
My name is Owen. I'm a taxi driver. I was expecting England to take the World Cup. So I have the England flags on. Honestly speaking, everybody just asked me, why you support England? Why not even at least one African team? You understand what I'm saying? People do not expect a black man to support England. If England do not qualify on this one, it will be a very bad thing, you know. It will also be embarrassing because we don't expect England to go out on the first round.
Nikki, and we're in New Town Market Square. I think they need to pull it together. I think they're very disjointed at the moment, but they've got good players. I think the best countries will win, and those are the countries that should go through. And I don't think it's bad for the World Cup at all.
My name is Mlu Hlela. Well, for me, I think it will take away the hype that has been attached to the World Cup. People like Rooney, Lampard. We see them on TV week in and week out. And to be here in South Africa and they get out as soon as tomorrow, then it will be a loss for us in terms of entertainment.
I'm Jessica and I'm from South Africa. I think that they're a very, very skilled team, like a lot of good players, but I don't think they work well as a team together. And they also had so much build-up and so much like ego in their team. So it's like interesting to see that they're not doing that well.
And I feel sorry for Green. Shame, when he goes back to England, he's going to get a very hard time. Go Green!
We like Green.
Don't hate him.
Yeah, my name is Yunus. The England team, they're hard, they're powerful, but they don't have patience of getting to goals. Like, actually, I trusted the guy called Frank Lampard, but he's not pushing into it. We don't know in their last game if they're going to do it good or badly as they started. It's not about money. It's all about patience and love of the soccer.
My name is Sipho Mgade. In the England football team, I think they've got some lot to say, but they are not playing nice for me. They are not up to standard. I won't be ashamed, but I'm expecting they'll be out.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.